about the smart voice of the body. Unlike our usual shows, I will not be able to open up the phone lines because Dr. Joper has a limited amount of time with us, and he's been gracious enough to even spend this time with us out of his busy schedule. I want to remind people this is a pledge drive. We are giving away copies of Return of Merlin. This is a wonderful spiritual mystery. I'm reading it now myself. It's quite exciting. We're giving it away to subscribers at a $75 a year donation. So for those of you who are interested in getting a copy of this very important new spiritual mystery, The Return of Merlin by Dr. Deepak Chopra, give us a call. During this pledge drive, we have a goal of 8 new subscribers during this hour, and the numbers are 510-848-5732, 848-KPFA, or if you're out of the area code, 1-800-439-5732, otherwise known as 1-800-HEY-KPFA. So without any further ado, let me introduce my guest. Dr. Chopra, I believe you're on the line with us, yes? Dr. Chopra, are you there? Hello, Dr. Chopra.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining us. Let me introduce you. Dr. Deepak Chopra is an endocrinologist and an internist who was schooled at the All India Institute of Medical Sciences. In 1977, after an internship in New Jersey and various residencies and fellowships and teaching hospitals in Boston, he went into private practice. Now, Dr. Chopra studied transcendental meditation, and it was Maharishi Mahesh Yogi who suggested to him that he learn the ancient art of Ayurveda, because, as he put it, doing this would make the doctor's job easier. Most of us are familiar with his numerous books, tapes, and PBS specials, where he addresses and blends all sides of Western medicine with the ancient practices of the East. His most recent books are Ageless Body, Timeless Mind, The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success, and now A Spiritual Mystery, the novel The Return of Merlin. So welcome to you, Dr. Chopra.
Thank you.
I just want to frame the show a little bit. I must tell you that I approached this interview with a feeling of responsibility to the many people who listen to the show, looking for tangible suggestions about self-care. I want to discuss your newest book, The Return of Merlin, but I want to work towards it by touching on some of the concepts you've been writing about leading up to this novel.
Sure.
Some people have argued, not me always, but some people have argued that your work on the origins and treatment of illness, particularly its prevention, sounds simple. I think, in fact, that you're recommending a series of life practices that can be done to achieve balance and health. I have a quote from the materials in your press kit. Quote, the reason people get ill is something very simple. How they think, how they interact with the environment, how they behave, and what they eat. If we address these simple problems of lifestyle and nutrition, then we can handle about 80% of all disease. Unquote. I need to talk to you about the other 20%. Many of my listeners are suffering from chronic autoimmune disease, AIDS, and cancer. The most recent research seems to be flagging genetics as a strong link to why people get sick. For those who are already sick, and in protection of a tendency of those who are sick to feel guilty, how should they hear the wisdom of the body language when it speaks through illness?
You have to make a distinction between responsibility and guilt. The word responsibility simply means the ability to have a response. And if you're really responsible, then you have many, many creative responses to every challenge, to every illness. And you do that through a process of participation in your own treatment, rather than relegating that responsibility to an MD or a medical deity who can just give you a prescription mm-hmm. and off you go, mm-hmm. because that is really not the way toward healing. Mm-hmm. The fact is, no matter what you have, if you have cancer or you have AIDS or you have autoimmune diseases of any kind, you can alter your participation in the whole process to help facilitate your recovery, or at least help you move in that direction, which doesn't mean that you don't resort to proven efficacious therapies. It just means that you're not unconscious anymore of your role in it. Because, you know, we have to accept the fact that we participate in both our illness and in our recovery and in the experience of health, because we are participants in this thing that we call life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing is that in some cases, illness can be a teaching.
Always illness mm-hmm. is a teaching. Mm-hmm. This is an imbalance in our system and is always, in fact, a teaching. character of participation with life in a certain way. And in fact, there's nothing intellectual about it either. Usually we also know what it is we need to correct. The fact is that the human body has evolved over millions of years of evolutionary time into a packet of formidable intelligence and information and energy. Your body has literally learned through millions of years of evolutionary time to take care of itself. The reason you don't get pneumonia every time you meet the pneumococcus is that your body knows how to make the precise antibody to it. Even though you personally never encountered this chap before, some ancestor in the past did and has passed along that information to you. Your body, you fall down, you don't bleed to death because there's a very wise and very, very precise and very amazingly complex and yet elegant clotting system that goes into effect so that you wouldn't bleed to death.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, there are millions of years of learning experience coded in your body, and your body, in fact, has the best pharmacy in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It makes everything. In fact, the latest wonder drugs that science is touting, interleukins and interferons and the so-called biologicals that are being, touted as the wonder drugs of tomorrow through genetic engineering, your body already makes them in the right dose at the right time for the right organ, in the without any side effects, and all the instructions are there in the packaging.
Again, it sounds simple. I think it requires a great deal of sort of consciousness and practice. In other words, I think that the concept itself is simple, but that in fact it requires a kind of a constant diligence or practice. Do you agree?
It requires attention,
mm-hmm.
and it requires awareness.
Mm-hmm.
It does not require any intellectual prowess, but it mm-hmm. does require accepting the innate wisdom that is there in ourselves, and that is part of every child. I mean, every child is born with it.
Mm-hmm.
The inner intelligence that mirrors the wisdom of the universe is there. It requires an acceptance of it. You know, we don't really have to do much other than stop interfering with this process,
mm-hmm.
which we do through not listening, essentially, to what the messages are that are being given off by this intelligence in every moment of our life. And it's not a new idea at all. Even
no.
in Western medicine,
mm-hmm.
it's not new. Claude Bernard, who was known as the father of modern medicine, coined the expression, the constancy of the milieu interior, which means that, you know, the body has the ability to remain in a state of dynamic non-change in the midst of change. It's called homeostasis. And, you know, homeostasis is another word for the healing system.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing, really profound about it.
Another quote from you is, quote, "We are not human beings that have occasional spiritual experiences. We are spiritual beings that have occasional human experiences."
Now that's...
Whoa, okay. I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm sort of leading somewhere. Without giving away too much of the plot of The Return of Merlin, your magical characters return from death in ancient time to play out their story today. Isn't aging and death, then, an important expression of spiritual transformation to be embraced for its lessons about detachment? And how does this relate to the lessons from your book, Ageless Body, Timeless Mind?
Okay, first of all, that quote, that you attribute to me, that originally came from Father Teilhard de Chardin, the Jesuit priest, who first made that statement. In The Return of Merlin, what I'm saying is that as you begin to peel the layers of your soul, in a sense, you will discover, as others who have gone this way, that you are an ancient being from ancient places and ancient times. That the real you cannot be squeezed into the volume of a body or the span of a lifetime. That right within your body cells, there are ancestral memories that go back eons of time. And that, in a sense, is also a scientific fact.
Mm-hmm.
There's an expression in biology, ontogeny and phylogeny replicate each other, that even in one birth experience, we go through the entire evolutionary history of our species and other species as well, that memories are more primordial to the cells on which right that we are a bundle of memories and dreams. As Shakespeare once said, we are such stuff that dreams mm-hmm. are made on.
Mm-hmm.
That's a literal fact. It's not, again, a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
In Ageless Body, Timeless Mind, I was making the case for a timeless reality
mm-hmm.
Where your identity, your sense of identity shifts from your ego, which is a concept, to your spirit, which is a reality.
Mm-hmm.
And once your internal reference point shifts from the ego, which is time-bound, to the spirit, which is that domain of our awareness, which is universal, then automatically you experience a reality which is not time-bound.
Mm-hmm.
And this is our privilege as human beings to encounter that reality. Aldous Huxley called it the perennial philosophy, and it is part of the wisdom tradition of every culture in the world.
Mm. It's a very lovely message and very supportive one to a sense of aliveness. I want to remind people who are just tuning in that I have Dr. Deepak Chopra on the line. He's been gracious enough to talk to us for the next 45 minutes for the next half hour, about his new book, The Return of Merlin. We are giving away copies of The Return of Merlin to subscribers to KPFA, and those would be subscribers who are subscribing at the $75 level. So again, the numbers to call to pledge is 848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732. Also in The Return of Merlin, the dark or shadow side of humanity is a teaching. In your book, The Seven Spiritual Laws, you discuss the law of detachment, which I also understand as non-duality. There is a tendency, I think, of people who begin spiritual practice to sort of forget to listen to the lessons of the shadow side of human nature. And it looks to me that when society tries to ignore the shadow side itself becomes heavier and throws things out of balance. Can you talk about how to give voice to the shadow side without opening the gates to destructive behavior?
I think the first thing is to get in touch with yourself, which is basically through spiritual discipline and through quietening the mind or through solitude or through spending intimate time with nature, to begin to start going within. Because, again, the wisdom traditions of the world have held that everything that we experience in the visible or seen world has its origin in the invisible or unseen world that exists somewhere deep inside our psyche.
Mm-hmm.
And when we start to probe there, in the beginning we find chaos and confusion. As, Nietzsche, the German philosopher,
mm-hmm.
once said, you must have chaos within you to give birth to a dancing star.
Mm-hmm.
The great Sufi poet Rumi was once asked, who are you? And he said, if you try and confine me and label me, you'll starve yourself of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If you try to nail me down in a box of cold words, that box will be your coffin, because I do not know who I am. I'm in astounding, lucid confusion. And that's true of most people, except that they haven't thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
If you go inside, you'll see that there's a chaos and there's a conglomeration of ambiguities. We are a conglomeration of ambiguities. An agglutination of different archetypal energies that, in a sense, are stoking the fire of life in the basement of our souls. We find that there are sinners here and there are saints here. There's the divine here, there's the diabolical here. There's the sacred here, there's the profane here. There's the dark night of the soul, there's the beatitude of grace. There is a forbidden lust, and yet there is the ecstasy and exaltation of unconditional love, the love of a mother for her child. If we are willing to acknowledge this and be intimate with all this ambiguity that exists within ourselves, many things happen. Number one, we spontaneously become less judgmental.
Yes.
We recognize that the sinner and the saint are both there. They're
mm-hmm.
exchanging notes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is, as we begin to go past this, we begin to go past these dark alleys and these secret passages, these ghost-filled attics of our own psyche, we find that there's a realm of experience which is beyond all this, which in fact is beyond the, as you said, the world of duality, which is the field of spirit, which is the field of infinite possibilities, which is in fact the source
mm-hmm.
of both the darkness and the light. And that the real you, the wizard, the Merlin, the spirit, is beyond opposites of light and dark, good and evil, pleasure and pain. And that Once you really get in touch with this part of yourself, you're getting in touch with the part that is intuitive, that is wise, that is nourishing, that is contextual, that is relational, that knows everything and sees everything, and in fact possesses the secrets of healing. That poem by Robert Frost is, we dance around a ring and suppose, while the secret sits in the middle and knows.
You're not sitting here in the studio with me, but I have an enormous smile on my face as you're talking.
Oh, thank you.
What I hear you saying is, once again, that in order to have it, you must have it all. It must all be there, and that in the course of being in the midst of it all, there's a sort of meltdown, a quality to it. Thank you for expressing that. I really have been concerned for the emphasis that occurs, and I have a question a little later here about that, when darkness is suppressed. In addition, in this new book, in this marvelous mystery that you've woven in The Return of Merlin, you've chosen Anglo-Saxon mythology to explore our relationship with the mundane and the profound. Another quote, and I hope this is one of yours. Quote, it is a reminder that life is an open-ended horizon and that we are magical beings. It is a reminder that in each of our lives there are moments when we rise to a privileged place where everyday acts take on mythical meaning. When humanity cannot make that ascent, we exalt it in legend, and that place is called Camelot, unquote. It sounds to me as though you're acknowledging that we achieve states of grace, but that we don't always stay there, and I'm wondering if you're suggesting that we can use the memory of the experience to help us return.
Yes, we can. And also, what is the big tragedy of our civilization, which is in fact an expression of the last 200 years of scientific achievement, which has given us the comforts of life and the luxuries of life, but the big tragedy of this monumental achievements, of all these monumental achievements of science and of our culture and civilization, is the loss of ritual and magic and mythology. The only rituals that you now see are gang rituals in inner cities. And yet, as humans, we have a primordial need for sacrament, for covenant, for ritual, for magic. It's a way of trapping people's attention, and it's also a way of transferring knowledge and wisdom from one generation to another. And I think mythology, in a sense, transcends the vagaries of history and the vagaries of space and time. History is merely the perception of facts, or what seem to be facts, to certain people at a certain time in a certain place. If you were to watch the O.J. Simpson trial or anything like that today, you'll see that even as we observe it, there are 100 different interpretations of everything that happened. Now, imagine what will happen 100 years from now, and we'll call it history, and we'll believe it as fact. So, in a sense, history is not at all anything that we can take as a reliable indicator of what happens to a people or civilization or to a culture. But mythology is something we can. In fact, the very word mythology, myth, is related to mother, to matter, to measurement, to time, to the womb of creation. Myth, matter, measurement, time, meter, music, mother is the womb of creation. And logos is the knowledge that exists in the womb of creation. So mythology captures the eternal yearnings, the dreams, the aspirations, the longings, and the truths of a culture and a civilization. And by relegating mythology to, an unimportant place, and putting scientific observation to a very important place, what we have done is we've really become bereft of the wisdom that that was there in our ancestors, and that they had devised a very magical and wonderful way of transferring that wisdom from one generation to another, whether it was the Bar Mitzvah, which was significant in the awakening of a certain transformation, mm-hmm. in inner life, mm-hmm. or it was the ritual of the covenant, the sacrament, or the christening. All these had very important roles to play. Mm. And by having taken them away, we have, in fact, robbed ourselves of some of the greatest wisdom that we could have inherited. And we have taken the childhood away, stolen the childhood away from our children.
Mm. What I hear you saying, in fact, also, is that a ritual and form has a way of tapping us back into a place of wisdom. But, you know, what occurs to me is that as you talk about reality being different among people, this is something that I've been thinking about a lot, because it sort of puts you in a position of realizing that just because you have your preferences and your opinions, and they seem so, there are so many different ones that will contradict your own, that there is this quality of needing to be comfortable in the dark, or needing to be comfortable without things being just so. With that in mind, you mentioned the O.J. Simpson trial, and it makes me concerned for what mythology will grow out of our current society, because certainly there will be stories and there will be myths, I think, and it's daunting to think what those will be.
Right, and it's also very important to recognize that even though we may have our immediate reaction right now to this whole episode, as with Oklahoma or many of the other things that are happening in our psychotic society, our immediate reaction is that we react with anger, we react with fear, not recognizing that it was our anger and our fear that gives birth to these situations in the
mm-hmm.
first place,
mm-hmm.
that it is the collective projection, that what is happening out there is the projection of our collective shadow side.
Right.
It is the projection of our collective dark side.
Which is what I was speaking to a moment ago when I said that when it's suppressed, it seems to bubble up and boil over.
Absolutely.
Instead of having it sort of grounding yourself in the midst of the fullness of your experience, which has positive and negative aspects.
Right, and which is uncertain and ambiguous.
Mm, very, very uncertain and ambiguous. Your message is very positive. I mean, when I read your books, I feel as if I've sort of fallen into the middle of a buttercup or something. It's this marvelous sense of, look, it's really not so complex. And I remember years ago hearing Suzuki Roshi, who was one of the founders of San Francisco Zen Center, saying, you know, the problems of birth and death really are sufficient. You really don't have to add anything to that, you know. So I always think of that when I'm reading your stuff. But in addition, you encourage us to allow ourselves to have our deepest desires and happiness. And I'm wondering, have you structured your message and vehicle particularly to counter what you see as these perverse trends in our culture in the West today?
Yeah, I think one of the things that has been confusing to people is that spirituality is very often equated with a self-righteous moral indignation,
mm-hmm.
and it is really not spirituality. It is a code of ethics that has suited us, suited organized religions in a
mm-hmm.
sense. And no religion really has the prerogative for having sort of gotten ahead of the other in this venture. You know, there are Buddhists and Hindus killing each other in Sri Lanka. The Islamic fundamentalists are doing all kinds of things in the Middle East and everywhere else. And we have the same problems here. So I think what happens is when you take the spirituality, which is the domain of experience, which is universal, and you try and organize it and you create rules and regulations around it, then you suddenly begin to see conflict in the name of God. And in fact, all conflict that has ever occurred is in the name of religion. Even right today in Bosnia and in Europe, what we're seeing is conflict in the name of religious doctrine and ideology. I think we are waking up to, hopefully, at least there seems to be some evidence of it, that we are waking up to a new millennium where we are recognizing that we need a new experience of so-called spirituality, and that it is about the existential dilemmas, as you said. You know, Carlos Castaneda once said, if you were aware that death is stalking you in every
mm-hmm.
moment of your life would be magical.
Yes.
You know, it
yes.
would be totally magical
yes.
because your priorities would change.
Yes.
So it's all a question of waking up and becoming more aware of who we are, that we are here for a very short time, and that, you know, if in that short time we cannot help each other to fulfill our desires, and bring joy to each other and bring about the experience of love and healing, we'll have missed out. You know, Buddha himself said this lifetime of ours is as transient as autumn clouds. To watch the birth and death of beings is like looking at the movements of a dance. A lifetime is like a flash of lightning in the sky rushing by like a torrent down a steep mountain. And if we were aware of that, life would be so magical.
You're taking my breath away. You know, what we need to do is just a break for about 30 seconds while I catch my breath. We're just going to play a little bit of music, and then we'll be back with Dr. Deepak Chopra. This is Lena Berman with your own health and fitness talk show. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is your own health and fitness talk show. I'm Lena Berman. I'm doing a special pledge drive show with Dr. Deepak Chopra. We're talking about his wonderful spiritual mystery, The Return of Merlin. And in fact, we are giving this book away today, copies of the book, The Return of Merlin, hardbound book, it's a beautiful book, to subscribers at the $75 level. So I neglected, because Dr. Chopra was literally taking my breath away with what he was saying, to give you the numbers to pledge. I should have given that to you so you could have run to the phones while we were playing the Spanish Benedictine monks for you. The numbers again are 510-848-5732 or 848-KPFA, 1-800-439-5732 or 1-800-HEY-KPFA. We're trying to pull in 8 new subscribers for this hour with this very special show with Dr. Chopra. I know you're transfixed to the radio, but I hope that you will have your fingers ready to dial our numbers and subscribe just
please
as soon as we're done.
The numbers again, Lena.
Yeah.
I think it's really important that if people want these programs to continue, that they have to participate in their...
You have it right from the doctor's mouth here. It's 848-5732, 848-KPFA, to subscribe right now. At the $75 level, you will get a copy of The Return of Merlin, Dr. Chopra's magical spiritual mystery. 1-800-439-5732, or 1-800-HEY-KPFA. So let us rejoin our interview. What occurred to me also reading the book is I was struck by your use of myth as we were discussing and telling a story with a message, and your inclusion of the concepts of the shadow and the feminine. I'm wondering how much you've been influenced by Jungian philosophy.
I've been influenced a lot by Indian philosophy. As a child, I was brought up with the concept of the goddess and the fact that the womb of creation has a feminine force in it, and that we are, male and female, both in a sense, expression of this goddess energy, which is nourishing and holistic and total and complete. So, in a sense, my idea of God was always a woman, and that influenced me a lot. But at the same time, when I was about 12 years of age, I chanced upon Idylls of the King by Alfred Lord Tennyson, and it captivated me with its imagery, with its onomatopoeia, with its nuances of language and rhythm. I could recite the whole thing when I was 12 years of age, and I just had to close my eyes and I would see the pageantry of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table and Guinevere that represented everything, that a woman could in its totality, and all these different characters of the legend, which were really, in a sense, archetypal energies that are within our own being. So I carried both the legend of King Arthur and the mystery of Merlin with me since I was an adolescent. And at the same time, I was very steeped in Vedic the Vedic philosophical framework. So somehow, that must have served as a recipe of sorts.
What I'm also noticing is that there seems to also be some element of Carl Jung in the book. And what I'm wondering, too, is whether you have some sense of what effect Western psychology has had maybe on Western spiritual life.
I think definitely Carl Jung has had a major impact on psychology. And
how about on you?
On me? Mm. In a sense, I sort of bumped into him very late in my life. And when I did, I recognized that he was restating what had always been part of the Vedic framework, that there's a collective, and they never called it the collective unconscious. They called it the collective conscious,
mm-hmm.
because what we call the conscious is the unconscious part of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I am a conscious being, and yet I'm at the mercy of every passerby on the street. If you flatter me, my ego gets inflated in 2 seconds. If you insult me, I'm wounded for the rest of my life, and I call myself a conscious being.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Vedic framework, the underlying ground of creation was the collective conscious, and what happened, on the surface was just a ripple in that ocean of consciousness. So when I came across Carl Jung, it was a reaffirmation, except that the terminology was a little different.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a sense of how Western philosophy has influenced our spirituality? Because it certainly is running at the same, we're sort of running on the same track, and I'm always wondering how much is going across the track at each other, with psychology and spirituality.
I think Western philosophy and also the great traditions of Western poetry, T.S. Eliot once said, poetry is arrayed on the inarticulate. And if you read Wordsworth and T.S. Eliot and William Blake and even Shakespeare, and you read all the great poets that have been part of the tradition of the arts, right from W.B. Yeats to anyone, Chaucer, you will find that there's a very similar, and Wordsworth, you'll find there's a very similar understanding of reality. But in what happened is we got so enamored after the Industrial Age of the material benefits that science and technology bestowed on us that really we forgot.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow we got distracted. I hardly can listen to a radio show, perhaps, other than public radio, or
mm-hmm.
public television, or when I'm traveling in England, the BBC, where in fact you are given an opportunity for the wisdom of your own contemporary people to be played out to you. There is a lot of beauty and a lot of wisdom in the philosophy of the West, even recently as Bertrand Russell and Joyce and Emerson and Thoreau and all these people, but we're not exposed to them.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the psychology of the West has played a role, I think, in getting people to begin a spiritual path. I think people meditated, got involved in the psychological stuff, or started meditating, started a spiritual path, discovered some pain, and ran to a psychologist. And so there's been this sort of interchange between the two.
Definitely.
Yeah. One of the other things that struck me about the book is that the characters who are all English feel very authentic and real. Is that because India has been sort of occupied by England, or is that because you actually lived in England for a while?
Both India is, my high school was run by Irish Christian missionaries,
mm-hmm.
and I was very familiar with both Ireland and England, even though I never visited those places.
Mm-hmm.
Then and later during high school, I spent lots of time in England. I actually passed the senior Cambridge high school examination in order to get into college, and subsequently I spent lots of time in England during my teenage years and adolescence. And when I wrote Merlin, I went to Cornwall and Wales and Somerset, which are Merlin and Arthur country, and really steeped myself.
Mm-hmm.
Day to day, every day in the magical lore of the land, and I didn't do any scholarly research at all. I call it nickel knowledge, going to a castle and picking up the postcards over there and things
mm-hmm.
like that.
No, it's very authentic. It feels very real. I'm waiting now to see the Masterpiece Theater version of this or the film version.
There is that decision being made right now.
Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised. I can't let you go without asking you about this. I believe an exercise is a way into an experience of embodiment and access to what I call the smart voice of the body. And I was thrilled to read that you swim 40 minutes a day. How long have you been doing that?
I've been doing that for a long time, and these days, since I have a little more time and luxury, I not only do that, I run for at least an hour, and I love the exaltation one gets after intense physical activity.
I have a theory that, obviously if we use our brain, it becomes more adept, and clearly if we use our body, it continues to signal all the little systems that you want it to keep going. So it's always been my suspicion that that was also a key.
Very important. Mm-hmm. You know, the Tufts University study on aging took people between the ages of 86 and 97. The youngest person was 86. And all they did was introduce physical activity. First, aerobic exercise, and subsequently even weight training. At the end of the study, these people had reversed all of their 10 biomarkers of aging.
Yes.
And some of these people who were in their mid-80s were physically more active and mentally more alert than people in 40s and 50s.
Yeah, the studies on the elderly with weight training in particular, which is what I like to teach people is weight training, because I think it's concentrated exercise and it requires a level of concentration. But it's overwhelming when you read the studies in terms of the bone regeneration and stuff. Dr. Chopra, when you get in a bad mood, how do you climb out of it?
I do something different immediately. I break the pattern by either taking a shower or running or going for a swim or sitting down watching my breath. I don't allow it to get locked up inside me and then manifest later as hostility or, anger. It's better to let it dissipate while it's happening. And I get in touch with it. I get in touch with it. I become intimate with it. And I release it through some intense physical activity or even through meditation or both.
So in fact, what you're saying is that you don't medicate it by doing something different, but in fact what you do is go into it and have some kind of dialogue with it while you do something to move on.
It's a sequence. First you witness it. Mm-hmm. Which means you become aware of it. Then you take responsibility for it, because my bad mood is my bad mood and it isn't your fault, even though I think it's your fault.
Yes.
So the second step is acknowledging that I'm responsible for it. The third step is expressing to myself, what I'm really going through, and trying to figure out why I'm going through it. And the fourth step is to actually release it through some ritual, which I just mentioned, take a shower, run, meditate, whatever. And the fifth step is to share it with your loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that on a regular basis, then you don't build up this toxicity inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also believe that usually if there is some kind of voice, sort of wearing at us in some way, that giving voice to it is important. That, as I said before, our society is seeing that when we try to suppress so-called negative thoughts, they boil over. So sometimes just dialoguing with it.
Yeah, and the rage that we see then as the manifestation of that.
Yeah, and again, going back to Jungian philosophy, they talk about, the fact that when we get, and it's similar to what you're talking about in Ayurvedic, about you getting out of balance, and then these voices are voices of out of warning you that you're out of balance. We're running out of time, and I'm wondering if in the last couple of minutes whether there was anything you wanted to leave our listeners with. I do want to encourage people to read this book. I think it's quite exciting, but I'm wondering, as you part here and leave us after this magical interview, whether there's any last thoughts you'd like to leave us with.
Well, my last thought is I wish people realized how magical they are. If they did, Rumi again, he said, by God, when you see your beauty, you'll be the idol of yourself.
Oh.
And I think we need to recognize the awesome grandeur of our being. And when we know that, we will see that it's sacred, and that from there we can create a world that is holy and that is healed.
Well, on behalf of everyone who reads your books and all of us who have been lucky enough to have you around listening to you, I want to thank you so much for the work you're doing. I think that you are a voice in the darkness that pulls us through.
Well, thanks for having me. It was fun.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks.
Good luck with the rest of your book tour.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye for now. So that was Dr. Deepak Chopra. This has been your own health and fitness talk show, which is not over yet. I'm still here with you. And we'll be talking to you some more. I must say I'm a little overwhelmed by that interview. It was such a privilege to be able to talk to him as intimately as I just did. And in fact, you know, this sort of opportunity for me to talk to him like this, for me to have an opportunity to talk to somebody of his caliber and his wisdom, and then for you to be able to participate by listening to this is only available through listener-sponsored radio. And I think you know that. So, you know, what we need from you now, particularly in this time when government funding is disappearing, as you know, and all that, and there's this scurry among all the different non-commercial radio stations for your funds, I'd like to remind you that KPFA remains the bastion of the most innovative and risk-taking radio, I think, anywhere on the air. I would not be a participant in this station if it were not so. So I'd like to remind you that our numbers, and this is a great time to call because I have, I feel a little bit of a responsibility to bring in at least 8 new callers. And you know what? You can let me know that you appreciate the work I've done on this show by calling now at 848-5732. That's 848-KPFA. For those of you outside of the 510 area code, it's 1-800-439-5732. Again, 1-800-HEY-KPFA. For those of you who are listening, you can get a copy of Deepak Chopra's magical book, The Return of Merlin, with a $75 pledge. I'd also like to remind people who have been listening to the show, if you would like to get a tape of the show, you can give me a call at my office during the week, and my number is 707-769-1458. Again, that's 707-769-1458 to purchase a tape of what you just heard. Now, to get a free copy of Return of Merlin, what we'd like to have you do is call us now and pledge. I have Asada here with me in the studio. That was quite an interview. Did you get to hear it?
I got to hear a good portion of it. And, you know, I'd like to ask you, how does this new book that he's done that we're offering today as a premium fit into your whole theme of what you've been doing with your own health and fitness show?
That's quite a question. You know, for me, what it is that what I've been trying to teach people, in a sense, by bringing these shows, what I try to focus on is the issue of self-care. Is the issue of grounding yourself in your own being and using the lessons that you get from your daily existence and from your health and from your life, and sometimes, unfortunately, from illness, to teach you along the way. Now, you know, I would never be pretentious enough to say that I was doing a spiritual show, but I think that there is always an underlying theme of embodiment and, like I said, sort of grounding yourself. And his book, I think, gives us the kind of inspiration that you need to be reminded to do that, to be reminded that you not only should care for yourself, but that you are, as he put it, a magical being, and that you're worth it, that this is part of the whole existence of life, that whatever things are happening to you, whether they feel comfortable or uncomfortable, that this is part of the ground of existence. And to have some kind of inspiration like his book or his teachings, I think helps us to stay there.
Well, then if you want to get a copy of this book, you need to call. I believe we have 20 copies that the publisher has given us free. And so you need to go to the phones and give us a call at 510-848-5732 or 510-848-KPFA. If you're out of the 510 area code, call us at 1-800-439-5732 and subscribe at the $75 rate. Now, we have an EFT plan for those of you who are considering becoming new subscribers. And we do all the paperwork. All you need to do is let us know that you can afford $6, and I think it's 75 cents a month. It's like one day not having lunch in a week, pretty much. You can get a copy of the book, the Deepak Chopra book that Lena has secured for our listeners. 20 copies. I don't know how many we have left, so they're going to go fast. So you do want to give us a call at 510-848-5732 and subscribe at the $75 rate. If you are a person who has been listening to Lena every Tuesday, then you need to give us a call. And if you can afford $20 a month on the EFT plan, do $20 a month to become a supporter of KPFA. If you are a person who doesn't have much money, we have a low income rate for you, and you'll get a program guide so you'll know what's coming up on Lena's show. In fact, Lena has a really incredible show lined up for next week, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But we really do need to get some more of you to go to the telephones, 1-800-439-5732, 1-800 Hey, KPFA, give us a call. Give us a call. Oh, we have some folks to thank. We have Penny Docker from Fresno, who called in, who renewed, and Dr. Peter Medill from Sebastopol, who has called in to support us, and also Charles Adams from Merced, a new subscriber. So that's one new subscriber. We need seven more of you to go to the phones. And on top of that,
match grant,
we have a $240 match from two donors in Oakland. What that means is that for every dollar you pledge to us now, it's worth two. So if you call in and subscribe at $75, that means that we have, oh God, my math, I can't think that fast.
It's a lot.
We got a lot.
You know what, though, in addition to what we've been saying, again, I want to remind you that, you know, this is, my show is a new show. This, Your Own Health and Fitness, is a new show. KPFA took a little bit of a risk with me. I've been doing this show for a year and a half on commercial radio, but we've not had a health show on the station, and it's been my intention all along to bring this show to non-commercial radio. But what that means is that if you appreciate having this kind of insight, you know, what we're talking about here is kind of a health show for the rest of us. It's not a health show where an aerobics instructor is interviewing people and talking about exercise in a light way. What we're trying to do on this show, like all the shows that we do here on KPFA, is go deeper. We're trying to be an advocate for those of you who are in the listening audience who maybe can't always be able to afford going to some of the healthcare providers that we interview. You know, maybe you have questions that you need to ask. This show provides an arena for you to call in and ask people very specific questions and really, you know, sort of work to get the answers out of them. This is a very important service, and it's only available on KPFA. KPFA is the only non-commercial station with a health show, and I want to, you know, remind you that if you want to see that continue, now is the time to call. We have a 240 match grant here. If you want to vote and let people know that you want this kind of health show in a non-commercial environment,
better call.
Please call now. It's 848-5732-848-KPFA. Again, 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-KPFA. We need to see some phone lines ringing.
That's right.
We need to know.
We've got two lines going.
We need to know that you want this kind of in-depth, intellectual, vaguely spiritual health show to continue. You don't want the sort of run-of-the-mill stuff. You want something deeper, and you want it to be designed for you and by you. That means you need to support it right now.
That's right. And Deepak Chopra was talking about this collective consciousness. I always like that word, because what it implies to me is that by little threads of energy, we're all connected, and there's no one part that functions without the connection of the other one. So the deal at this radio station is that without you, you know, we're only a piece of us. We're not even a radio station without you. I mean, that's the reason why we're sitting here. It's because of you. And without your support coming to us right now in the form of dollars and pledges, we can't do it. We can't do it alone. So join us in part of this collective consciousness to raise money for this radio station, to support Brainstorm, to support this show that Lane has been bringing to you every week. I know that you listen. We get calls about it all the time. New folks who are surfing on the dial and discovered this show, please give us a call now. We have lines open. In fact, we have at least six lines open. So six of you right now, please go to the phones. Give us a call at 510-848-5732 or 510-848. If you can remember the letters on your phone, hey, KPFA, if you want to do it, 800. We have six lines open, plenty of room for you to join. Join us and help us make this match, this $240 that folks in Oakland have put up. And we don't even know what their names are. They're just anonymous for us right now. But I know that $240, if one of you called in at $20 a month on the EFT plan, that we'd make the match, just like
that.
Well,
yeah, but not only that, but for those of you who are really feeling generous, we can be generous back by giving you a copy of this very magical book that we've just been talking about, The Return of Merlin. I've been reading the book. In fact, you know, it was really frustrating because I wanted to finish the book before I did the interview. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a 422-page book, and
it's a big book.
And I got really well into it, and then I thought, well, I'll just skim the rest of the book so I know. And I couldn't skim it. It's so dense. Mm. It's so full of mystery and symbolism. We'll give that book to you if you pledge now at $75. That means if you pledge now at $75, we get $150, and you get the book. So you can't do better than this. This is a gift.
That's a great deal.
Yeah.
I mean, the interesting thing that Dr. Chopra said was, you know, when you asked him that question about what do you do when you get stressed out, when you get depressed, and a lot of times that's the one question that we don't ask these folks that come on with these big books and, you know, great theories. How do you actually apply it to your own life? And so I really appreciated his candor, and I mean, it sounds like what the rest of us do, you know. I mean, some of us haven't figured out how to deal with that. But I think that here at KPFA, we get to ask those questions because we have the room and the space to do it. Otherwise, we just, you know, 5-minute bite, tell us about your book, and then we'd be moving on to the next topic.
Well, that doesn't happen here. Yeah, not only that, but KPFA is the only station that is not under the obligation of money being given by underwriters. In other words, we're not obligated to perform in a certain way. We depend completely on your support, and that means that we belong to you and that we will always be advocates for you. There is no other non-commercial station on the dial here in the Bay Area that supports you in this way, that is not, shall we say, influenced by the way that they get money. This is a pure station, and it won't survive without you. It's 848-5732, 848-KPFA, or 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-HEY-KPFA. We need your pledge now to fill this matching grant, and we want to give you a copy of Deepak Chopra's book, The Return of Merlin. This is a chance for you to not only get the book,